Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast with Benji Nyson. This show is supported by our show partner, Lacole. This is the recap of stage two of the Tour de France, another puncher's stage finishing on Mer de Bretagne. They do two ascents in this 184-kilometer long stage. If you're not familiar with the Mer de Bretagne, 2 kilometers at 7%, the sort of from 500 meters in to a kilometer in, it's steep, 11%. 10.5%, some steeper pinches than that, and then it flattens off at the end. The last 500 meters is about 2%. We've seen riders like Dan Martin win here before, Viermoes with early attacks, and we wondered, would someone like Woods, who's lost time on GC but is a good puncher nonetheless, be able to take the yellow jersey off Alaphilippe with an early attack? Before Benji tells you about some of the brake mechanics, just if you could leave a like on the video if you're watching on YouTube, or give us a review on podcast plays. It makes a big difference to us and how the performance of the pod goes, if that's even English. But Benji, the breakaway, no English riders in that, and a big fight for the Maillot à pois once again.
Yes, indeed. After yesterday, we had Edith Schelling in that polka dot jersey. We had Anthony Pérez fairly close to that. And those were the ones that were trying to get in the breakaway very early on. Once again, the race started off, and the first attacker, Victor Campenaerts, had to happen, just like yesterday. But once again, not in the breakaway. So it's not working very efficiently here, is it? And eventually we saw Schelling attack about five times or so until a breakaway of six was formed. Turns, Edouard Turns, Schelling, Anthony Pérez, Clark, I think Simon Clark this one, Cabot, and Jonas Koch. In the end, that is a group where two of the riders will be heavily invested in that KOM battle, and we saw that Perez was the better sprinter at the KOM points. He took the fast one, he took points from Schelling on the second one as well, and it all comes down towards the last of these KOM points. Well, the last of the ones they can achieve before they get called by the peloton, and that's where it becomes interesting. 500 meters to go, we see Schelling go very early. We see Perez counter that. Schelling's on a bit of a gap, he catches back up, and then it becomes another battle of who's gonna go now. And Schelling is in second wheel. Perez at the front. Perez just needs to make sure he can follow and out-sprint Schelling, because he knows he's got the better sprint. But Schelling does it very trickily, as in he did it the same way that in the Tour de Suisse women, Elise Chabbie decided, okay, I'm going to try and put Dagenet under pressure and force her to go early. And that's what Schelling does here to Perez. He launches early. Perez has to respond. Perez decides to keep on sprinting, and Schelling has the second kick when Perez doesn't have it, and Schelling takes the points. He's celebrating with his head. That's something I hadn't seen him too much yet, but pretty funny indeed. There's going to be some gifs about that, that's for sure. But all in all, the battle in the KOM for that moment was done, because it's not over yet, the KOM battle. And intermediate sprint time, we've got that breakaway with Edouard Turns taking the majority of the points in that group, because the rest didn't really bother too much. And then it was a sprint in the peloton. We had a bit of a setup very similar of yesterday. Cavendish was in a good position this time around. We saw Caleb Ewan being set up perfectly by De Bijst once again, and De Bijst with a really proper lead out here, and it brings Caleb Ewan to a position where he's, well, we know that Caleb Ewan, if he's in a good position, he's the best sprinter in the world, and he was in a good position, so he takes the intermediate sprint. That's the end of the story. Cavendish and Merlier second and third. I don't know by heart in what order, because I feel like Merlier slipped over him on the line, but I'm not sure about it. But in the end, Cavendish in the top three of that green jersey sprint. So I know it feels weird having Cavendish go for green, even though, yeah, it's logical.
I must say the last two stages have played out perfectly for Caleb Ewan's sprint green jersey ambitions. Wout van Aert's not been up there in either of the stages. Neither has Peter Sagan. So those two big contenders on these two stages, where there's 50 and 50 available at the line, despite the punchy finishes for the green jersey competition, they haven't really taken advantage of those finishes where Ewan wouldn't be competitive. He's then won the intermediate sprints on both days out of the bunch, the first man after the breakaway. So he's got to be very, very happy with how these first two stages have gone. And now we've largely got pure sprint stages where he or Sagan will be competitive. So Sagan is going to have to get pretty creative, I think, in the breakaways, etc., to go for green. Maybe Colbrelli's the man, but he kind of stuffed himself today. But that's something to monitor. Before we get into the run, into the finish, I want to mention our show partner in more depth, Lacolle. They produce performance cycling apparel. They've supported this podcast almost since its inception back at the Tour de France last year. Seems like a lifetime ago. It was less than 12 months ago, which is crazy. But they've been on board since pretty much day one. They produce their performance cycling apparel at the base of Monte Grappa. And if you want to pick up some Lacolle kit during the tour, you can use code LRTDF20, all caps, in the description, which will get you 20% off all Lacolle items, even if they're already discounted. That's LRTDF20. They've just launched their new lightweight collection, which is pretty good. I just got some delivered yesterday, and I approve it greatly. But Benji, the run into the first ascent of the Mer de Bretagne, 8.52 bonus seconds on offer. The peloton timed it perfectly. No Dauphiné, not catching the break in time mechanics here at the Tour de France. It was the peloton was meaning business.
Yeah, certainly. They caught up with Edouard Turns on the exact Mer de Bretagne, the first run-in, obviously. And the interesting part here is that there's also KOM points and bonus gate points at the top of that first run-in of the Mer de Bretagne. That climb has 8 seconds, 5 seconds, and 2 seconds for the first three riders. And perhaps some people would be interested in that. We saw a bit of a setup, De Koenig setting up Alaphilippe fairly well at the front of the group at the foot of that climb. And I think that they were trying to get him in a good position so that when someone tries to go for these 8.52 seconds, he can try and respond and perhaps outsprint them on the latter part. But a lot of people seemed interested. And suddenly we had Van der Poel, who was not in a perfect position at the entire foot of the climb, move up in the first 300 meters. And he settled himself in a good 7-6 position in the Wheel of Van Aert. And then suddenly, an attack by Mathieu van der Poel on the second last Mer de Bretagne. And I was like, oh, wow, this is early. Is he doing this? He's doing this. And there was no response. And I don't know, I feel like it was on one end surprising that he was doing this. But on the other end, it's Mathieu van der Poel. He was probably cold and didn't have a jersey surprised next to him. So he just wanted to go for the attack and wanted perhaps to go for the seconds and for the KOM points, because obviously the KOM jersey is his final goal.
The KOM. Mate, he's not even finishing this race. I think he knew that if he wanted to go into yellow today, he'd need to gain time on the road and also take as many bonus seconds as possible on Alaphilippe. Going into the stage, Alaphilippe taking the 10 seconds yesterday and the bonus seconds on him, as well as a lot of seconds on the 8 seconds on the road. So Alaphilippe had an 18-second gap going into the Bretagne. Benji and I said yesterday, no chance Alaphilippe loses yellow on the Bretagne, best puncher in the world. We said Mathieu van der Poel just took the 8 bonus seconds behind. It was Alaphilippe leading out pretty much all the GC guys, and then it was Roglic and Pogacar coming around him, the two Slovenians. Pogacar looking very strong in the uphill sprint. He took the 5 seconds, Roglic 2, Pogacar taking 3 back on the 4 Roglic took on him yesterday. But after that, it was like the scene we've seen for the last 10 years in Tour de France and in sort of high-level stage racing. Ineos taking control, Dylan van Baarle on the front, then Kwiatkowski, Gegenhardt, Port Thomas, Carapaz last. And De Klerk had been pulling all day, but it was Ineos time now on the descent. And then the run-in to the Mer de Bretagne, not as technical yesterday, not as important to be at the front, and thankfully no major crashes today. It was a much better day than yesterday. But yeah, Ineos, did you at any moment think, Benji, they're going to try to lose the wheel tactic to get Port back some time? Or is this a place to play Carapaz as a card? And then with Wout van Aert not looking so good, maybe puts pressure on Roglic and Pogacar to close them on the Mer de Bretagne?
I think it starts off earlier. I think at the start, it's trying to keep them in a good position for the bottom of the Mer de Bretagne. And that's the initial part, because the run-in for that is quite treacherous with the descent going towards it. And from that point onwards, yes, indeed, I think that they were trying to keep their leaders at the front so that when somebody makes a move, they can use the Ineos strategy to just keep on reeling that in, because we saw that Richie Porte was actually working for other people today. And I was on one end surprised by that. And on another end, he's been saying it for months. So
I just didn't believe him. I was just like, he's lying. Of course, could he go for GC? Well, he wasn't.
Yeah, so sad. But in the end, it was indeed Ineos leading up the initial parts of the final Moto Britannia. And I feel like I was looking for a few riders there. I was looking at, where's Vanderpool? Sixth, seventh position in the Wheel of Van Aert. Perfect position. Genuinely perfect. Where's Roglic? Literally in the wheel of Pogacar for the entire final 10 kilometers.
Yeah, I know.
Ah, so funny to see, because he wasn't even near his teammates, not near Van Aert. No. He decided Pogacar is the wheel I'm taking, and it's probably a good idea, to be honest. And then Alaphilippe, and I was looking and I couldn't instantly find him. He was not in the first 10 riders.
I thought he was marking Woods. I thought he thought correctly, and this is what I thought would happen, that Woods, having lost 9 minutes yesterday, was going to do a Villermoge or Dan Martin 2018 and attack early, have the other GC contenders be like, I'd like the stage, but also I'm not going to be the one closing down Mike Woods, who's not a GC threat. My overall goal is GC. So I thought Alaphilippe was marking him. Maybe he was just badly positioned. Maybe he was tired after he did crash yesterday. He had a huge effort like to win yesterday, where I don't think it suited him as much as today. And then he had the intermediate sprint up the Moto Britannia as well, where he let everyone out and then kind of faltered. So maybe he just didn't have the legs today. But yeah, it was Murasa. I was like, is this Petrovacoj 2016 Brabantse Pale Petrovacoj back? It wasn't, unfortunately. It was Murasa for Alpecin Phoenix actually attacked. He was marked by Formolo,
yep.
Which interesting that Formolo got freedom rather than being put on leading out Pogacar duties. I'm not sure. I was kind of surprised by that, actually. I don't think Ineos of old would have done that. But anyway, Formolo goes past Murasa, promptly dies 1,000 deaths on the bike. And then it's still Ineos leading out, except Port's leading out and Geraint Thomas isn't there anymore. He's not third wheel. He's slid back and I can see his helmet bobbing up 10th, then 15th wheel. He's at the back of the group just hanging on. And who was the first major attack out of that group, Benji? Was it MVDP? He had one initial attack, right?
Yeah, certainly. I don't think we saw any proper attack next to Van der Poel there, and Van der Poel went for it. And I feel like it was in the same fashion as he did the climb before. He just gave them like an idea in their mind. This is what I'm going to do. Do what you want. And he did it again at the final ascent of the Moto Britannia. And he caused an initial gap because he has that extra kick. And there was no initial response, because what is Pogacar going to do? Roglic, Van der Poel is not a GC threat for them. Alaphilippe's literally the person that could think, okay, yellow jersey, Van der Poel, he's going to try and take it. So technically, I'm the first person who has to respond to this.
Everybody's
looking at Alaphilippe to do it.
Okay. We got it wrong. We disrespected the man who's back. Van der Poel saw the threat of Nairo Quintana attacking. Oh. And he closed down Nairo. Seriously, I couldn't believe it.
Right.
It was great to see it. Van der Poel saw Nairo attacking. Nairo came from deep and hit the GC group. And Van der Poel was like, holy shit, the Condor is flying. Got onto his wheel. So that was the initial move. And Van der Poel then started pacing. The whole Jack Hague's on his wheel. And it's Kelderman, Pogacar, Roglic, etc. Just Carapaz there, Thomas gone. And Colbrelli countered. Now, that was the move that was surprising, Benji. If you were Colbrelli, yep, would you have hit that group at 800 meters when you'd be backing your reduced bunch kick against them? Quick answer is no, right? But yeah, then you got Van der Poel leading out. He's got Pogacar, Roglic on his wheel. And this was the big acceleration with 750 to go. Colbrelli trying to close it. Did you think he was gone straight away when he had that second acceleration, Benji, from the GC guys, and you saw some heads on a swivel?
Yeah, because you tend to see in a group behind when an attack happens whether somebody's going to instantly respond to that. And it's still far enough from the line for a person like Roglic and Pogacar not to respond, because if it's closer, then they can try and go for second and third. But right here, they're thinking, if I go now, I can't sprint for second and third, and I might lose bonus seconds to the other Slovenian. And that's why they don't do it. Alaphilippe, same story. But the thing with Alaphilippe is he kind of has to respond, because otherwise your boy is running away with the yellow jersey. And the gap started expanding, and it started expanding. And it became clear that Van der Poel was going to win the stage. But with how many seconds would it be enough to take the yellow jersey today.
Exactly. He gets into that last 250 meters. You can see on the ASO graphic, he's doing like 45 Ks an hour plus on the flatter section. Draft is huge. And Alaphilippe just didn't take it up from the GC group / didn't have the legs. It was Wilco Kelderman that was the first man trying to bridge across to Mathieu van der Poel. He created separation to the main GC group. Only Pogacar and Roglic could mark him. And Pogacar was on Kelderman's group. Wheel came out of it with Roglic then coming third. So Pogacar took second, taking 6 bonus seconds, Roglic third with 4 bonus seconds. But it was that MVDP attack from 790 meters coming off Colbrelli's wheel. Roglic and Pogacar happy to let him go / probably couldn't do anything to respond. And yeah, incredible win for Van der Poel today. Emotional afterwards. I'll play his finish line interview now and then we'll get Benji's thoughts on this win.
So much happening, I suppose, in your mind right now. That's the stage victory and there's the symbolic. You're going to be yellow jersey, yeah. Mathieu.
I have no words. Really, I don't know what to say.
You won a stage on the Tour de France. Can you talk to us about the way you won it? Because you went to go get those bonus seconds at the top of the first climb. You went to get the victory as well. I mean, you wanted this one so much.
Yeah, for sure. I gambled a little bit and I played everything I got the first time already because I knew I needed the bonus seconds if I wanted a jersey, and it was also my last chance to get the yellow jersey. So. It's incredible.
Who were you thinking of when you crossed the line?
Yeah, my granddad, of course.
So Benji, of the two stages, were you expecting MVDP to actually be able to take out today's stage? We think he's awesome, but against Alaphilippe, Roglic and Pogacar, did you expect him to win on like a pure puncher / GC men finish?
Well, we had him as podcast pick, I think both of us, for the stage. I just became scared this morning because yesterday we had such a power move by Alaphilippe that I was like, oh God, he can just do a carbon copy of stage one and stage two and might take it again. So I didn't dare to speak out today. Like, is it Van der Poel? Is it Alaphilippe? They both had that opportunity today. But I should have stayed with my podcast pick. You should have remembered your podcast pick. And eventually, Van der Poel indeed taking it. And what's so wonderful is that we've had this slow build-up in his career. He started off in the Pro Conti scene. He did, obviously, cyclocross beforehand to the top of the world in that sport. And then on the road, he started building up the same way that Van Aert did. Building up, doing first the cobble races, doing good in those cobble races, then doing the World Tour cobble races, doing those perfectly. And then eventually it all comes down to going to his first Grand Tour this year, obviously Olympics afterwards. But this is what he wanted, the yellow jersey. I heard yesterday that they apparently already made the yellow kit and so forth before stage one, just in case he won stage one, because they had so much confidence in Van der Poel of potentially taking the yellow jersey this weekend. Then it didn't work out yesterday and the wonderful colors of purple yellow, but eventually today back to the normal kit, he does it. And it's so mythical to see the growth and be able to experience that in the sport, a rider that comes from the lower end and just builds it up towards the top of the world. And he's not where he wants to be yet. Olympics are coming, but I think his Tour de France is basically goal-wise as perfect as it can be. It's over goal-wise, but I think he's still going to be seen a lot in the coming week.
Here's the full stage results. Van der Poel first, Pogacar second, 6 seconds behind with Roglic and Kelderman in that group. A further 2 seconds behind Alaphilippe, Mollema, Wingegaard looking very good. Aguita, Latour, Haig, Woods, Carapaz, Masguru. Oh, that goes on too long. But yeah, there's a fairly large group behind them. GC, as Benji said, Van der Poel takes the yellow jersey 8 seconds ahead of Alaphilippe. So those 8 seconds he took in the first ascension of the Mer de Bretagne plus the seconds that Alaphilippe sat up on the line yesterday, they made a big difference. Pogacar third on 13 seconds, 1 second ahead of Roglic fourth, then Kelderman, Haig on 24-26, Mollema, Aguita, Wingegaard 26 seconds, and Guru 10th. The big story at the moment that we haven't spoken about, Benji, is Ineos. Geraint Thomas had a terrible day. He lost 17 seconds on the road to Pogačar and Roglic, and that's 21 and 23 seconds when you include bonus seconds to Pogačar and Roglic. Already he has lost, when you take into account the bonuses yesterday, let me do some quick maths, I'm struggling, like 27 seconds, 27 to 28 seconds on the Slovenians. That's big trouble for Thomas, because say he has the TTs of his life, and you know, that's 28 seconds is probably where you make up that time on the TTs, and then they're going to presumably take time on him elsewhere in mountaintop finishes, etc., even if he is in their group, just bonus seconds alone. So not a good day for Ineos, losing more time with Port and Thomas. Port's now at 3 minutes back, and Carapaz is at 31 seconds. So Jumbo Visma are the team with the two GC threats, Vingegaard and Roglic. Have we underrated Vingegaard, Benji? He's at 26 seconds, same as Hagen Co. His TT at Dauphiné was good. Do you protect him as a second GC leader now?
No, certainly. I think that Vingegaard is, his time trial is really good. I think that if he went for GC, he could probably top 10 the tour, not like quite genuinely, even with the competition that's here. And I just feel like the problem is that, well, it depends. I don't think other teams will mark him. I don't think other teams will consider him co-leader. I think that Jumbo should use him as co-leader. Well, to be honest, let's be real. Like, Ineos and Silvestre, they have made mistakes in the first 2 days already. I think that they're not going to respond if Vingegaard goes. They can't, because they drop otherwise.
Yeah, I would consider him a serious GC threat. His TT is
me too, good. But
yeah, I guess, but maybe we thought McNulty was going to beat Roglic in Basque Country, or I did at least. So maybe we're overhyping the young lad. But yeah, he's a really good card for them to play, because he's not going to lose in the TT. And on quote-unquote slow mountain stages, i.e. when no one drives it, when there's a group of 15 finishing, I'm expecting him to be there alongside riders like Bilbao and Chavez, etc. So that's Jumbo-Visma have got to be super happy with where they are right now, yes, despite Pogačar taking a second ahead of Roglic. Ineos, do you think they stuffed it up, Benji? What did they do a Movistar in that they've driven it full gas to just drop their leader, Thomas? Did they need to drive it that hard, given that it was Murisa and Formolo attacking, or were they just trying to control it?
Kind of find it surprising, because usually when their leader is in bad form, they tend to like drive it backwards in the way that they would relay at the front, pretend to be riding at a decent tempo, but the tempo was not large enough to threaten someone of their own team to drop, for example. They did it on Montaiguel last year in the Tour de France to make sure Bernal could follow at that point. And today they just went a bit too hard. I think Richie Paul just went too hard, and eventually Thomas was put under pressure. And I think that it likely would have been a bit more of a 1v1 battle between people if Ineos didn't force that tempo at the start. I don't know who would have teammates at that point to drive it. Would Wout van Aert kick in and do it for Roglic? I doubt it. I doubt they would place that. And looking at other teams,
Formolo didn't.
Don't think they, yeah.
He's the man that would have. He did it on the last climb. Was it Rochefoucauld on Liège-Bastogne-Liège? Yep. But he attacked instead today. So Benji's 100% right. No one was really looking like attacking or pulling. That wasn't sort of going for the stage like Cole Brayley and Mathieu van der Poel, who obviously aren't GC threats. So really interesting opening couple of stages. Apart from the crashes yesterday, which I don't really think you can't blame ASO for that, do you think this has been a really well-designed opening two stages for excitement to the Tour, Benji? I think it's a massive tick.
What do you mean, a massive tick as in good or bad?
When does a tick ever mean bad? When is something right on your exam and a teacher ticks
an animal,
it and says...
you can get Lyme disease from those animals.
What expressions do you have in Flanders? Do you think it was good?
Yes, I think it was good, but I think that there was a lot of discussion on social media yesterday whether having such nervous stage is good at the start of a Grand Tour, and that perhaps a prologue would fit better on the first stage to tone things down. But I think that's a harsh decision, because then you're basically saying to X amount of people in the peloton, yeah, you can never get a yellow jersey on the first day, because that's impossible. And if the TT is long enough, the prologue, then you're making sure that people can't take it on day two or day three either. a sprinter might not end on 10 seconds or 9 seconds on the first prologue and might does not be able to gain back those bonus seconds on the second and third stage to get in the yellow jersey. So stuff like that, I think, is a dangerous decision to go off two crashes in one of the early stages and say, oh, we want prologues. And you always hear the same people saying it. It's going to be the GC people that say that, the ones that had time losses in their team, because the winners of those stages won't be responding with, oh, they should put a prologue stage in the first one. Alaphilippe wouldn't say that yesterday. I can assure you of that.
I want to see Alaphilippe, MVDP, Roglic, Pogacar type guys in the yellow jersey, not Stefan Kuhn or Bisseger. Sorry, guys. I love you guys, but I want to see the top dogs taking yellow or fighting it out. At least, and where's he been, mate? Not looking good. Luchenko looking better. And I don't think a prologue would calm them down. They're all going to fight tooth and nail in stage one anyway. And the first crash was not their fault. A bit of news on that. Apparently, the French gendarmerie put out a social media manhunt or womanhunt for the person who held out the sign. I guess we should have done this at the top of the show, but unfortunately we're not professionals. In terms of DNSs, there's obviously were DNFs yesterday, but in terms of DNSs, fortunately not too many. Froome started, Martin started, Turnison started, Kreuzfeldt, Kusin all fine, and others.
Soler's out.
The big one is Soler, and he broke both his arms or something, Benji. He finished the stage.
Fractures in both arms, which is just crazy to think about.
Jesus.
And I think we also had Cyril in one. We had the guy that was sitting on the ground, Sutherland, and a fourth person, but I generally can't remember the fourth person.
Hirschi started. He looked banged up, though. Hirschi, that's the thing for UAE, Benji. You were saying who would have been the man to set pace for Pogacar. It would have been Hirschi, even if in his moderate form. But he was kind of hanging out at the back looking a bit banged up. But fortunately, not too many people DNF'd or DNS'd, although some, we're not sure how much it affected. What about last thing, Benji, before I say what the route is tomorrow, Pog and Rog, does anything today change your opinion? Is Pogacar now going to win the Tour because he won the two bonus sprints?
He was already winning the Tour, mate. Let's be real.
Oh, true. Yeah. So it's not changed your view.
Yeah. No, I think we both have the view that either one could win, but that you're more on the Roglic side. I'm more on the Pogacar side here. And I think that it's fun that this battle is there. I really enjoy seeing the Pog versus Rog battle and the fight for these bonus seconds left and right. Oh, it's so fun to see. And they do spicing up these stages. And I'm happy that those are the two that are fighting it out for GC. But let's not forget, who knows, there might be a third candidate, a Wilco Kelderman, to come out on top in the end. You never know, right?
Yeah. Mate, if it's unbelievable. I get more and more mad the better he does, because I'm like, how has he come top five? The level you need to be at to come top five on these two stages is an insane level, like insane level. And Kelderman has been at that level. And he hasn't won a road stage or a race on the road since 2013. So I don't understand. He's so good. But it's crazy. So Kelderman is definitely one to watch. I'll be watching his TT closely. Tomorrow's stage should be pretty straightforward, more what you expect from the first big of the Tour, from Lorient to Pontivy, 183 km long. It should be a nailed-on sprint for Ewan Mullier, Cavendish, etc. As Benji mentioned in the preview, there is a hairpin, two hairpins in the run-in. It is technical. You need to be in good position, but there's not a corner right neck, right at the finish, so it doesn't suit Ewan. In that sense, I think I picked Ewan. Who did you go with, Benji? Mullier, right? Case Bowl, maybe?
I don't remember. We're going to have to take a look at that pinned comment by someone that made a pinned comment with all our names that we chose under the preview podcast on YouTube. That's pretty cool. But I do wanna say that there's the run-in to the line that is pretty descendy. So I think that positioning is going to be key.
Yeah.
Did we mention, I think, on the preview podcast that this finish was pretty technical?
Yeah,
I recall there being some technicalities. Yeah. And that's why I chose a rider that has more acceleration and a good lead-out train. But Merlier won't win this. Like, he fell yesterday and he's not looking good. So I'm going to ditch my pick, and I'm going to say a different name, and I'm going to jump on your bandwagon and say Caleb Ewan, because he's been absolutely splendid. His leadouts at the intermediate sprints have been insane. He's the best sprinter in the world if he's in a good position. and he's going to show that on stage three.
I mean, maybe Mark Cavendish goes for the win. He just launched that NFT collection, which I wouldn't want to promote too heavily, but yeah, that was weird. So I don't know if that was his idea or not, but yeah, it'd be interesting to see who is the top dog of the sprinters tomorrow. I mean, if there's any win this week, Ineos have to try something. The only way, that's the way they can get Thomas and Coe back into this tour. I know it sounds hysterical, 30 seconds back Thomas, but they need to gain some time and some crosswinds if they're there. And they have the team to do it. Van Baarle, Kwiatkowski, Rowe still look outstanding as ever in that sort of role. So they have to try. If that happens, maybe the forecast won't support that. But hope you enjoy enjoyed this recap. Thanks to Lukov for supporting the show, and we'll see you with it tomorrow. Make sure you watch Benji's PCM playthroughs in the morning, because that will have some sprint deviations and usually doesn't tell you the winner. Ciao.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.